Hey, happy Saturday morning to you out there, wherever you happen to be. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob.
It's back to school Saturday.
It is. Ironically, I'm Rob and that's Beth. That's why this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, Beth Guckenberger, and it is
back to school Saturday.
For most people, there are some people, I was checking my Facebook, there are some people these kids have been in school for a couple of weeks.
Okay, well then this is midterm Saturday if you're in one of those schools. I mean, who knows exactly, but I mean, did you used to like the start of school when you were growing up?
I did, but the thing I remember about it was we started after Labor Day and we're done before Memorial Day. That Labor Day was the end of summer. Memorial Day was the beginning of summer.
Did your school day go to like 5?
No. It was just like 8 to 3.
Was it a school for special children?
No. This is what I think most people's memory is.
Is this the issue with Cleveland?
No, it's not an issue with Cleveland.
Okay, sorry.
Right? So it must be that I'm just so much older than you.
It must be. Like back in the day, they had to still work in the fields.
That's just how it was. And now people are like going to beginning of August, sticking around till mid-June.
We've got to keep up with the rest of the world whose educational systems are just passing us by.
Don't get me started. Not necessarily the case.
Okay, well.
But that'll be another show.
Okay. Well, yeah, back to school Saturday. I mean, I think this is really fun. This is when you get finish out your school supplies and you get the crayons and, like, the cool boxes and backpacks and your new shoes. And, I used to grow up and get, like, a red sweater on the Saturday before school started. And my mom and I would always talk about should I have a button or a zipper and tie. And it was very exciting. I'm just saying.
Should it have a button or a zipper? Really?
I'm just telling you.
These are the things I've missed by allowing my wife to take Gracie.
You have missed.
Christine taking Gracie to go shopping. I've missed the button versus zipper conversation.
I mean, you just don't know. And now that was, 25, 30 years ago. Now there's all kinds of discussions to have.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, is it covering my belly or doesn't it cover my belly?
No.
How low is the neckline?
I know.
Harder than the button zipper
conversation. Yeah, I think that one would lasted maybe a good 10 minutes, and then we would be exhausted and go out for lunch afterwards. And it was all time for back to school. And I like back to school because you have, like, fall sports, and then you have, like, the fall leaves, and then you have the fall holidays, and you get to wear a turtleneck, and it's just, actually, I don't wear turtlenecks, but fleece, and you get to have caramel apples.
You just get on a roll. Pumpkin, lighted candles.
I'm just telling you.
Hey, I got to let people know who's going to be on the show.
Okay,
today,
yeah, that's right.
So we got a great story during our second segment after the first break. Michelle Perry. Just a remarkable story. She's a woman who's been serving orphans in the Sudan. She has one leg. That's part of her story. It's not really the central part of her story. It's just like, hey,
nothing can stop her.
That's exactly right. It'll be a compelling story. And then kind of this button versus zipper conversation a little bit for the 21st century.
Yes, yes.
Is Becca Hamrick Martin is going to join us. She's written a book called Bare Naked Truth. It's helpful advice on purity to teen girls.
That conversation.
And we have teen girls.
Teen girls. I got like 6 of them.
And you have a teen son who attracts lots of teen girls.
He is a little too cute for his own good. But I think that one of the things that this conversation has changed. I mean, I read my version of this book, 30 years ago by Josh McDowell, and there's been I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Joshua Harris, and there's been various versions of this conversation as we continue to put God's principles into the current context of our culture, and this is just the latest version of that. As girls, I mean, that crazy little Snapchat app, if you do not know what Snapchat is, parents, you'll be checking your children's phones.
Yeah. Now you got Vine, you can do instead of Snapchat, now you got Vine, 6-second videos.
And as soon as they're viewed, they are erased, which is just means zero accountability as teenagers send images and videos between them.
The interesting thing about that is that people think they're erased, but they're really not. They remain on your hard drive, they remain on your... So somebody who knew what they were doing, they could extract all of those things. So kids, again, they think that this goes away and it goes away forever, but as some of our more infamous politicians have figured out, nothing goes away forever.
No, it doesn't.
But the idea that it could, the idea that I could take a snapshot of myself, that I could send a video of someone else, whatever, and that somehow it would go away, it's unfortunately an enticing thing for even the best of kids. So we're going to be talking about that after the bottom of the hour. So.
And I think just even that conversation about how to apply principles of purity in social media, how do I portray myself, not just in what I wear, but what I write and what I post. And, you know, I can't.
Just, hey, you know, I work in a high school. So just the way that people carry themselves moving from class to class in the classroom. So it doesn't have to be just an online conversation. Just the way that I present myself to the world in whichever medium I choose. It's a daily bombardment of choices.
Well, I was saying to a teenage girl, I think part of the reason why I like having this conversation is because I think that, in general, they're not totally aware of the effect they have on other people. And I was explaining that when you post something on Facebook, anybody now has the ability to drag that thing to their desktop and have access to that picture whenever they want, even if you decide later to take it off your Facebook. Once it was up once, somebody can have it. And how many young men are now dragging and posting and keeping catalogs of their classmates in their bikinis from their summer vacation to look at whenever the heck they want to. And
yep, absolutely.
Not okay. Honey.
You know, on a lighter note.
Okay, lighter.
It, you know.
Bare Naked Truth.
It is high school football season.
I like that.
And I know that your son, who's a sophomore, right?
Yes.
He's making the move. You guys have moved to the United States, and he has played American football before, but now in Cincinnati especially. Cincinnati is one of the hotbeds of high school football in the United States.
Ooh, who would have known?
Well, you should know that. And so I just wonder how he's making the transition, what he thinks about two-a-days, football.
Any of you who either have a teenage son or have had a teenage son at some point in your life, you realize you can't make them do too much they don't want to do on their own. And so we're waking ourselves up at 6 in the morning to go to these crazy two-a-day practices. And you can't make a high school sophomore wake up at 6 in the morning unless they really want to.
Absolutely.
So there's definitely quite a bit of drive there. And
so I know that, you know, most people now are having this discussion about concussions. And mm-hmm. Do you have any worries about that, you know?
I'm not so worried. You know, God has really had his hand on Evan's body his whole life. And so I don't worry so much about those kinds of things. I worry about things like it's got to be, like, let's keep the value where the value is. This is not your identity. Like, mm-hmm. You're first a boy, and then you're a Guckenberger, and, you know, then possibly your nationality, and certainly your faith. And football players, like, so maybe in the top 10, but better not be in the top 5.
Yeah,
like,
for him, you need to remind him, this is not in the top 5.
Yeah, I'm more worried about the emotional damage than I am about his physical damage. I mean, here's to hoping he didn't hurt his knee or something, but I just want to continue to put sports in the place that they belong, because you come into a country like this where they've been at camps and clinics and, mm-hmm. you know, off-season whatevers and these crazy 7-hour practices, and it would be easy to think that this is now the most important thing in your life.
Yeah. So I know that you're back in the States with Todd, you know, working back here after 16 years or however many in Monterey. So what's happening back-to-back? How's the transition going and all that kind of stuff? We only got 2 minutes, so you can't tell me everything.
I mean, the transition has been it's been a challenge. Just I've spent most of my adult life in another country, so just trying to remember how to live here and live Christ-centered here, you know, it's a different kind of pressure. I mean, there's certainly all kinds of pressures we face on the foreign field, but this is a different kind of pressure. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, it's a lot more subtle and a lot more relentless, it can feel like. We've got great things going on around the world. If you have an orphan care organization, we are networking and linking and sharing and training and growing from with other orphan care organizations around the country. So that's really kind of the focus this fall, is to grow.
Let's carve out some time maybe at the end of this show. There's just so much stuff going on at Back-to-Back right now, and I'd love to make some time for the show for people to really understand what it is that you do for your normal job and what all those people are doing. And it's just some great stuff. We talked about the documentary a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of great stuff going on. So maybe we can carve out some time.
I would love
later.
That.
Hey, until then, we've got two great guests, as we talked about before. Michelle Perry is going to join us about her book, Love Has a Face. It's her story of one woman's miraculous journey with Jesus in Sudan. It's going to be a great story. And then we'll kind of hit that purity to teen girls topic that we just talked about with author Becca Hamrick Martin, who's written a book called The Bare Naked Truth. Some great stories, some great information. You're going to want to stick around.
Absolutely.
No
I'll see you
that.
In just a few
minutes. Not even a few minutes. 60
seconds.
This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll see you back right after this.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with Back-to-Back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through Back-to-Back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the Back-to-Back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall. That is Beth Kuchenberger. And we hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning wherever you happen to be today, end of August. Probably the heat rising a little bit wherever you are. So I hope you're enjoying the day. Beth, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
Happy Saturday to you.
I'm having a great Saturday. I'm here with you.
Well, thank you. That's so nice. I appreciate that. But it's about to get better.
Mm-hmm.
A really remarkable story, and we love stories, and this is certainly a good one. So Michelle Perry is joining us. She's written a book, Love Has a Face. I love the subtitle, Mascara, a Machete, and One Woman's Miraculous Journey with Jesus in Sudan. I mean, what could make you want to read a book more than that? That's a great subtitle. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to be with you.
Absolutely.
You know what, Michelle, one thing that Rob and I talk about a lot on the show is this idea of story, that God has us in a story. The story has different chapters. What makes a better story for our day? How to encourage our listeners to participate in God's story. I mean, all things story. So when I think about you, and you started out, you know, in Florida, and then you find yourself in the Sudan, there's got to be a story somewhere between Florida and Sudan. Would you walk us a little bit through kind of how that part of your life unfolded and what caused you to say yes to such a change?
Well, it's been a journey to get to Sudan, and it's been a journey to from there to here now. And so basically, you know, my journey started with just saying yes to Jesus, and it didn't start with getting on a plane and going clear across the world, even though that's what I wanted to do. It started with saying yes and going across the street and loving my neighbor and learning about what God's love looks like and how His love is so much bigger than I can even begin to ask, think, or imagine. And so He just gradually led me step by step. I started in kind of the inner city in Texas, and then graduated Baylor University, and thought I was, you know, I didn't know exactly what was going to happen right after that. But within, you know, a year, I found myself living in right next to a slum in Calcutta and in India, and spent about 2 years in India collectively, and then got moved clear across the world to a place I never thought I'd live, which is Colorado Springs. And I wasn't quite sure what to do with it because they didn't have any slums or leper colonies. but after being there for several years, you know, God asked me, he said, would you give me the next years of your life to go love with me in South Sudan? And I was like, okay, where's that? I don't know where that is.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Not only, you know, did you pray a dangerous little prayer, which I'd love to hear what it is. I'd love to know how God answered it.
Yes, it is a dangerous little prayer, and it should come with, like, you know, caution tape, because it will change your life. I grew up in, you know, a pretty standard middle class home, and all my needs were provided for, and I didn't have much contact with the poor or with the broken. And when I went to Baylor, I was just 17, and started going to this church that met outside under the I-35 overpass, and it was called Church Under the Bridge. And that was
I've been to that church.
Have you really?
That's a great,
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's a great church. Uh-huh.
Oh,
absolutely.
I love them. They really have been a foundation for me. And it was my first time to interact or be with the homeless and the marginalized up close and personal. And I was absolutely petrified. And was just sure that they were up to no good when they were trying to, you know, follow me back to my dorm, or so I thought. And when I got across the street, I realized all they were trying to do was take care of me and make sure I got across the street okay. And that just broke my heart, and I realized how horribly small my love was. And I went back to my dorm room and just wept. And, you know, I began to pray, and it's been a prayer that has been a theme in my life from that day until now. And it's, Jesus, I want to love with your heart, and I want to see with your eyes.
Hmm. That is a dangerous prayer. I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's absolutely a dangerous prayer. Within a few weeks, I was working with inner city children and got a chance to work with Church Into the Bridge and the organization that is a part of that. They have a wonderful volunteer program, or they did when I was in college, working with at-risk children. And so I hung out with them for most of my undergrad days. And then, you know, I found myself in the slums of India. And again, I thought I was going to go do something amazingly great there. And no, it was just about learning how to love and learning how big God was and how small I am.
Hey, I'm interested, you know, I know that authors sweat it out when they think, I got to think of a title for this book, something that'll be, I want to know how you came up with the title, Love Has a Face. How did you end up there?
Well, it's been a theme for me for, gosh, I don't know, for years. And I don't know that I necessarily put it in those words, but it's been all about being the face of God's love and about being an image bearer of who he is into places that, you know, have no other opportunity to necessarily see him. And then by his grace and, you know, clinging onto his strength, being an accurate representation of who he is to someone who may never have another opportunity to see him. And so that has been a theme. And so when I began to write this book, I had played with a lot of different, you know, I love alliteration. I love poetry and all these great kind of fun artistic titles. But it became just really obvious that this was what this book was about at its core. It's yes, its context is Sudan, but its message is about being the face of God's love wherever you are, whether you're in, you know, the United States or whether you're in Uzbekistan or any place in between.
Mm-hmm. You know what, Michelle, sometimes I've been a missionary in a foreign country for a long time, and I the very first time I realized God walked outside of the box I had put him in really had nothing to do with geography. I just had personally never been in a place where I needed him so much, and so I saw him come through. And I'm wondering, like, when you got to your first time, whether it was in India or in the Sudan or wherever it was, how was it that you saw God move in a way that was kind of outside of your box?
Well, my very first time, this is a fun story. My very first time, like on my own, basically, in a foreign setting was in Bangladesh. And I was there for 4 months, and I didn't quite realize what I was signing myself up for when I got there. But I was staying at a children's home, and because I was the missionary, for the most part, was the only Western, you know, person there. I was the one that everyone came to if they needed prayer, or they needed, you know, they had a problem and they thought I would have the spiritual answer. And, you know, I was like 19. So everything was a box. I didn't even know what it was like to really live outside of, you know, my own comfort zone, let alone the United States. And we had to learn another language because very few people spoke English. And it was just, it was quite a crazy 4 months. But one particular time, there was a little girl that was very sick, and she had a fever, and they came, you know, and got me to pray for her because she was sick, and medical care was not the easiest to come by, and sure, so I went up and prayed for her. I didn't know what I was doing, and prayed this really very tentative prayer, and next thing I know, she's hugging my neck, and the fever had left, and it took me, I think, about 15 minutes to realize that God had actually healed her, because it was so out of my box. I'd never seen him do something so instantaneous. And so I began to walk in a greater realization that the things that I read about in the scripture, that God was still doing, and that he was a lot bigger than what my experience of him had been. And it really put a hunger in my heart to know him more.
We're talking with Michelle Perry, who is the author of Love Has a Face, Mascara, a Machete, and One Woman's Miraculous Journey with Jesus in Sudan. And it comes from Baker Publishing.
Michelle, one of the questions I had for you is, you know, as a writer, I'm sure you felt compelled to get your story out, to share your experience with other people. What was your hope for a reader? Like, were you hoping that they see God in a new way? Were you hoping that they travel to the Sudan? What is it that you want them to hear from your story?
My whole heart in anything I write is to steward the story of what God's doing in my life and to allow that to become a place where my readers can connect in with God's heart for them. Because until we know God's heart for us, it doesn't matter whether we're in South Sudan or we're in, you know, the southern part of the United States, you know, it doesn't, or the southern part of our city. It doesn't matter where we are geographically until we know who we are in Jesus and who he wants to be in us. And so my heart with Love Has a Face is to really demonstrate that anybody who reads this and who is willing to just say yes to God one little step at a time can be loved past the place of their fear and past the place of their pain and past the place of their no into a great adventure with his love that really will go on for all of eternity.
Hmm. Well, Michelle, thanks so much for being with us. What I really love about the book, Love Has a Face, is that it's not only a great story, your story, about how you and Jesus have partnered in an adventurous life, but it really is also a way to inspire readers to do the same thing in their own lives. It's not just something I read about and say, that's interesting. It's something that I can read about and say, yes, I could partner with Jesus just like that as well. So tell us where our listeners can find the book.
Well, you can find it online, and you can find it wherever books are sold. And then in finding out more, I also have a second book that recently came out. It's called An Invitation to the Supernatural Life, also by Chosen Books.
Great. Well, best of luck with both of those things. And, Michelle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and you guys have a blessed weekend.
All right, you do the same. Thanks so much. Just some, you know, another great story. We love stories.
We do love stories. I think about her story and the idea that, you know, she said, it says in her book, she just said yes. She just said, yes, Lord, if you're providing me this opportunity, I'm going to trust you have something for me.
Yeah.
And how often we might eventually land on the yes, but we got a lot of space between the hearing and the going, right? We have the wrestling and the evaluating and the pros and conning and all of that.
You know, I'm not a big runner, right? I'm not a big exerciser, but I try to. And what they say over and over and over again is you surround yourself with people who also are runners, right? People who will inspire you or that will encourage you or
push you.
And so the thing about books like Michelle's and people that we've had on the show is we always said that you said there's this big gap between I want to do that and Jesus says to go do that and my yes might be later. When we surround ourselves, either by reading a story or having people in our small group or at a church or wherever it might be that do those things, it inspires us to do them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the kind of story that's just a great reminder that, hey, go, say yes, do it.
You never know what's on the other side for you.
That's exactly right. And so to build yourself a community of people who that's the way their life is. And so whether it's running or learning something or saying yes to Jesus, you got to have a community around you to make that
and
happen.
Then to trust that he'll take care of the details. Like if, you know, you're thinking, oh, I can't get off work, or oh, my spouse will never allow that, or I don't have enough money. If God's asking you to do it, he'll pull it together.
Say yes. Well, we're going to shift gears after the break. Becca Hamrick-Martin is going to be with us talking a little bit about purity to teen girls. She's got a new book out called The Bare Naked Truth, and she's going to join us right after the break for a very timely discussion, one that just seems to keep going and going like we talked about before. So you want to be back? We'll be back in about 3 minutes, so you should join us there. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll be back right after the break.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning wherever you happen to be.
Back to school Saturday.
Back to school Saturday, perhaps, for whatever part of the country you're in. And you might be scurrying around going somewhere.
You're in the car right now.
Looking for like a parking spot.
I hope your teenage daughter's with you.
Absolutely.
Park the car and just listen.
That's right. Take a deep breath. Grab a, you know, a Diet Coke somewhere.
Stay with us for the segment.
That's exactly right, because author Becca Hamrick Martin is with us. She's written a new book called The Bare Naked Truth It offers honest and helpful advice to on purity to teen girls. And I have, as we were talking earlier, I have a 15-year-old.
I have.
You have a 15-year-old. So timely for us, and I imagine for several million other people in the United States.
Absolutely.
So, Becca, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Becca, tell us a little bit about the story, kind of what was your impetus to write this book? What caused you to feel compelled to take the time to put this onto paper?
As somebody who worked with so many teens, I worked with prisoners' kids. I worked with kids who were in church every Sunday. And, you know, they were all coming to me through camping ministry and through different ministries asking me the same questions. You know, what's different about waiting? Why is it good? Why is it bad? You know, and they had all their honest questions, and they didn't feel like it was being approached in a way that was relevant to them. And I wanted to do that and to talk with enough people and to get enough voices in this book that they would be able to have somebody to relate to.
Now, I know that, you know, there's you can go to the bookstore, you can look in your Christian bookstore, you can look at Barnes & Noble, wherever. There's tons of books that might have to deal with, you know, purity and all those kind of things. I know that there you have a little bit different message in this. Could you tell us what makes this book a little bit different?
Absolutely, yes. I wanted to approach it in a satirical way. I think that's something that this generation understands, something that's humor-based and yet isn't afraid to hit those tough questions. And I also have the privilege of having over 20 different authors, popular authors, who wanted to share their stories and their past and their regrets, and not just regrets, but their positive stories with teens. And I also had a focus group of teen girls who said, yeah, this resonates with me, or yeah, this doesn't. And so we kind of walked this road together as I wrote the book.
Tell me a little bit about your story. How, you know, I know from reading the book a little bit about it, but tell our listening audience, how did you meet your husband? Who was it that spoke into your life and helped you make the choices you made at that same juncture?
I met my husband as a teen. We were 14 years old, and I apparently did not even notice him at the time, but he had a crush on me, and I don't know how I missed the tall Swedish blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy, but I did. And our paths crossed again when we were 22 years old, and it was love at second sight for me. And as far as choosing to wait for him, definitely my parents had a huge impact on me. And it wasn't just that threatening way that you think of in Christian circles where, you know, you're told the consequences all the time. But I knew that out of their love and their care for me that this would be a positive decision for my future.
Now, I have to confess, I have a teenage son, a teenage daughter, and you know, I've had plenty of conversations with them, but it's a little bit different for a dad talking to his teenage daughter about purity. Do you have any tips for dads who might be listening out there about how to bridge that gap that may be a little bit more natural for a mom to do?
It's definitely a little bit more awkward, and I would say 100% the way that you are treating her mom, if she's still in your life, just the love and the care that you show, your daughter is going to want that in a relationship herself, and she's not going to pursue those more unhealthy relationships, ideally. You know, these are things we do in hopes that they're going to work, but as you know, there's no 100% guarantee.
Right.
In the first segment, Rob and I were talking a little bit about social media and the app Snapchat and just some of the ways in which the purity discussion has expanded now in this day and age to include not just how you dress, but what pictures you post, what's the perception that you want people to have of you and your sexuality. And so how does your book address just the constant opportunity that girls have to protect their own purity?
It addresses it in the sense of just your self-respect. I tell girls that waiting and these little choices on social media that you're talking about, they're good choices for yourself. It's a selfish decision because in the future, you're not going to have bonded physiologically with all of these people. And if, you know, I understand that people have pasts and that, you know, there are things that happen that are maybe out of your control, and yet you can start making good decisions from here out for yourself.
You know, there, just on the practical side, there, and I think I've probably made every one of these mistakes, but parents can get involved without invading their kids' privacy necessarily or scaring their daughters away. You know, what you might say about what are some ways some parents can sort of begin this conversation without freaking their kids out?
You know, I love that, because I had one person ask me, well, can I just, this dinner time conversation? And I said, well, I don't know. It depends on your relationship with your teen. But, you know, you can start by sliding the book under your daughter's pillow is one of my suggestions. And then maybe it'll open up the conversation. I think it's all about relationship, though. I think it's Josh McDowell who said, rules without relationship equals rebellion. And I see that again and again. And so I think if you will go back to that old-fashioned relationship, and you will spend time with your daughter, and you'll hang out with her, she's going to open up more and have that respect for your opinion when the opportunity arises for you to share it.
I mean, there's just so many voices coming at our young daughters, right? We have their peer group, and you have social, you know, all pop culture, and you have their music choices, and we're just one voice in there. How are some of those other voices? How does pop culture affect our daughters' and young girls' mindset about their self-esteem?
It affects them so much, because in the sense that at the girls that I work with, you know, they're so focused on, and it affects me as well, our looks and how we feel about ourselves and our esteem through that and our sexuality, you know? And I think we have to continue to come back to realizing that those things are just so temporary. And when they can be taken away in a moment. And when we focus there constantly, we don't have the lasting ability to see our worth in God's eyes.
Yeah. And so, you know, if I'm a mom, which I am a mom of teenage girls, what recommendations, how can I turn up the voice of my influence in my daughter's life? How can I continue to say it? You know, I was just thinking about how maybe moms are thinking, what if I say the wrong thing, or what if I embarrass her? And so instead of stepping out there, they just hold back and wait for that perfect moment. But those perfect moments don't happen all the time. So what recommendations do you have for us to kind of initiate with our young girls these messages?
I think if we'll take those everyday opportunities that you were just talking about, maybe it's not the perfect moment, but maybe you notice something on television and you say, you know, this is what I'm seeing going on with this celebrity, or, you know, and not in a judgmental way, but just sharing, you know, this is something that's fading and passing, and reaffirming the positive attributes that you see in your daughter that are not necessarily physical, but things that you appreciate about her in other ways. She's going to come to appreciate those things about herself as well. And I just encourage you to take hold of those moments that you were just talking about.
Now, Becca, I know that it's awesome to have a sort of a go-between to have this discussion exactly like your book. And so I want to make sure that before you go, how do our listeners find the book?
You know, you can find it at any local retailer, and they'll be happy to order it for you if they don't have it. But definitely go to my website, BeccaHamrickMartin.com. That's BeccaHamrickMartin.com, and you can find it there as well.
Very good. We will definitely link that up on our Facebook page and our website as well, so our listeners who are used to going that direction will be able to hook up quickly with that. Becca, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us and to push out the story of a really great book.
Thank you, Rob and Beth.
All right. Take care. You know, as parents of teenage girls, like I said, you got to have something, at least as a dad, like, hey, let's talk about this book.
Mm-hmm. Right? So, yeah. that's your good excuse.
That's right. As compared to, let's just talk about this. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall. That's Beth Kuchenberger. And we're going to be back in 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. So we hope you'll join us then.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Welcome back.
This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. That's Beth Guckenberger. I'm Rob Hall. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday wherever you are. Some really good, I mean, a great story, right?
Absolutely, Michelle Perry. Absolutely.
You know,
she said yes.
She said yes, you know.
She has a great, I mean, you and I talk all the time, what would make a better story? That's the filter, right?
That's right.
So a better book, story is absolutely going into
right?
the slums
her,
of India.
Her book, Love Has a Face, Michelle Perry, inspiring.
Mascara, then, machete, all of it.
Yes, all of it. And then just some good practical reminders that our kids, our daughters in particular, are bombarded with messages about what they should be like, what they should look like, how they should carry themselves, and that we need to intervene in that conversation and help them figure that out. So having Becca on with her book was great as well.
Yeah, I was thinking when we were talking with her, just the idea that the other messengers in the world, like the pop culture messengers, the peer messengers, those things are, they're constant. They don't ever turn their volume down. They don't ever go, I wonder if this is the right time I should say this. Like, I wonder how this will impact her heart
right.
if I comment. Like, they're just constantly sending one message.
Yeah. Maybe she's not ready for this conversation.
And then there's us, who's like just, you know, hemming and hawing and analyzing. And then every once in a while we think, hey, the door's open. I'm going to step through it. And like,
yeah.
There's no way on earth that tiny little amount that we share is going to stand up to the bombardment that they get from the other side. We have to talk to them.
Well, and I appreciated Becca's heart about that, that there are ways to do that, to ease into that conversation. There's a certain tone. There's a certain ability built around your relationship with your daughter,
mm-hmm.
first and foremost, that will allow you to enter into that conversation. If you just show up someday and say, honey, we need to talk about your purity,
mm-hmm.
that just ain't going to go over too well. But if you have a relationship with your daughter, and, you know, it's a good, solid relationship, you just begin to enter into this conversation, and you have to do it.
You have to do it, yes, because we think to ourselves, well, maybe we'd be, you know, inadvertently exposing them to things they haven't thought about yet. Like, that's, that's not true.
No.
They're thinking about it.
Yes, Barbie, when they have a Barbie doll at age 7, sends them a message
that's
about
right.
what it means to be feminine, what they should look like, how they should carry themselves. They've been bombarded with a million messages before he even thought about having this conversation.
I also like the Josh McDowell quote where she said, rules without relationship equal rebellion. And just that really builds on when we had Brenda Garrison on a few weeks ago talking about relationship is king. Like, you have to continue to have a relationship. And on top of that, all the rest of this stuff flows.
What a legacy that Josh McDowell really has carried. You know, we had him on the show a couple months back, and if you wanted to, you know, if you're out there and you didn't hear the show, you can go find it on iTunes or on our webpage, reallifewithbethandrob.com, or at iTunes, Real Life with Beth and Rob. But here, there's this constant theme of Christian writers.
We've had Josh on the show.
That's right. As I just said, generations later, you know, Josh was on the show, and here is Beckham Hamrick Martin having the same conversation in a different cultural context and referring back to, I really love Josh McDowell. I mean, man, that guy has a legacy.
He has a legacy.
A couple hundred miles long.
And part of why he had the legacy is because he was able to speak about something that lots of other people at the time weren't comfortable talking about. But yet, I can remember going to Josh McDowell conferences and listening to him because no one else was saying it, you know.
Yeah.
And I just appreciate Becca saying, yes, as you pointed out, there are lots of books out there about female purity, but I'm going to join the conversation because someone might hear this and I might make a difference in her life.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I said at the beginning of the show, you know, we're gonna close the loop here. And I said at the beginning of the show, I'd love to create some time at the end to talk a little bit about what Back to Back is doing. It's sort of that a little bit of lull in time. They've kind of their end of the summer guests. You've had, gosh, how many? I mean, several hundred people come
800.
Visit. 800 people come visit you in Monterey and other places around the world. So kind of what's going on with Back to Back now? You've moved back to the States. A lot of staff has moved back to the States to central offices. Things are just blowing up. Things are growing. And so fill us in.
Yeah, for the listeners, for those of you who aren't familiar, Back to Back is an international orphan care ministry that my husband and I direct full-time. We're in several different countries, Nigeria and India and Haiti and Mexico. And I encourage you to go to the website, back2back.org, and there you can find out some really practical details about how you can go on a trip or sponsor a child. But, you know, I really think this season of Back to Back is about, I mean, this morning my husband and I were talking about how we want to be kingdom-minded. There's about 145 other organizations that serve orphans around the world. We're all registered under the Christian Alliance for Orphans, and they're all different sizes. You know, the vast majority of them are pretty small, but how can we share what it is that we're all learning? We all are having this kind of collective growth spurt where we're learning about what's the best thing for a child. I mean, I was just saying to someone the other day, no one on the planet thinks it's a good idea to grow up in an institution. So why are we all rushing to build more orphanages? That's not a good idea. Nobody should be doing that. And that's dawning on those of us in orphan care now. Like, why are we trying to create the best scenario of the worst scenario? Let's go for the best scenario of the best scenario. What does a child really need? Mm-hmm. 163 million orphans around the world, only somewhere between 8 and 10 million of them live in institutions. So who's talking about the other 150 million of them? Where are they? What are they doing? How can we meet them? How can we find them? How can we service them? How can we bless them? How can we communicate to them? So there's a lot of, for us, as switching from being on the field staff here now to the central office full time, we're really going to be thinking strategically about how to link arms with other people, how to think outside of the box. This is, nobody thinks it's a good idea to meet orphans on Saturday morning and feed them a meal and just, you know, count their heads. No, that does nothing. You'll be doing the exact same thing 40 years from now with their children and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. You've got to get engaged and involved in a really profound way. So at Back to Back, that's really what we're trying to, we call it the 5-point child development plan, but really trying to think about, how can I be involved in the life of a child physically and spiritually and educationally and emotionally and socially?
You know, it's interesting. We've had on the show, we had Jesus in Haiti, mm-hmm. been on the show.
Tom Osbeck. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and we've had, you know, plenty of recording artists and mm-hmm. other organizations, and this does seem to be sort of a groundswell of support and interest in the same direction.
That's right.
About holistic care instead of institutional care. And so you mentioned Back to Back has the 5-point child model.
Mm-hmm.
So unpack what those are. If people are involved in orphan care, whether it's through Back to Back or some other organization, they might be familiar with similar language. But for those who are not, and I've met so many people who are like, listen, I'm not interested if it's just a matter of sending some food and just letting them live in poverty forever. So the movement is going a different direction. Tell our listeners how that's happening.
And I will. I'd be happy to. And I also want to say that it is a movement, and we're a part of it, but we're not claiming to be the only people to do it. And in fact, I was just telling someone the other day, I don't want to be the only person tuned into a channel. Like, we all have the Holy Spirit. We're all in this thing, and we're the only people hearing that. That doesn't make any sense. Like, mm-hmm. it does make sense to me that the Holy Spirit is impressing upon the hearts of millions of people around the world to be more holistic in their care, because that's how Jesus touches us. You know, Jesus certainly did that. So the first point is physical. You have to touch the physical need, or else they don't listen to the rest of it. So you have to make sure they have a roof over their head and have had their vaccinations and they aren't hungry. And you do need to address the physical need. It just doesn't stop there. Then the spiritual need, because of course we want to all be with them 10,000 years from now as we introduce them to their Father. Mm-hmm. And then educationally, because education is absolutely the ticket to them becoming sustainable and independent in their own country and not a product of whatever version of poverty that culture perpetuates. Then emotionally, because all of them have had trauma of some sort, the abandonment and abuse issues that led to them becoming an orphan, You have to touch them emotionally. You have to address those wounds and really do the work it takes to walk someone through that. And then socially, I mean, you can have this well-fed, believing, educated orphan, but if they don't understand how to operate within a social structure outside of their orphanage, then they are not going to be successful as adults. So
yeah, and it just makes intuitive sense. You hear, you know, I hear you go through that, and our listeners hear you go through that, and you're like, well, yeah, that makes sense.
That's the way we raise our own children, right?
That's exactly right. The thing that has struck me, you know, we are in the midst of making this documentary. We had Brian Stege on a couple of weeks ago, one in 163 million, and I knew intellectually, wow, that takes a lot of resources to do that. But it was totally different when we were making the documentary about Shannon and how many people it really takes. We can't stand on the sidelines and think 163 million people are going to be taken care of
by 145 organizations.
That's just crazy. But what struck me is there's so many ways for people to get involved. You don't need to move to Haiti. You don't need to... You know, you don't even need to go on a trip. There are other ways to get involved. And I know, like you said, Back-to-Back's not the only place doing this, but give us an example, at least for Back-to-Back, how people get involved in supporting orphan care.
The way that I most recommend for people is to support a child. If you sponsor a child, we will enter you into a relationship that we then help cultivate between you and that child. So we talk to that child about who you are, and we talk to you about who that child is, and then create a bridge with which you may spend time together physically one day, or certainly you'll correspond with each other. So sponsorship is really critical.
And you know what I love about Back-to-Back, I need to give a plug, is you told me a little bit about how, you know, there are some organizations that says, I'm going to build a bridge between you and another, and an orphan, and they might see that orphan once a quarter, right? And we've only got 2 minutes left, but what I really appreciate about Back-to-Back, I think you called it that we have sight. Tell me about it. You'll be better at it.
Well, no, it's just some organizations commit to sighting a child, you know, 4 to 8 times a year. And certainly for us, we sight the child 4 to 8 times, you know, a day. Like, you know, we're in the daily life of the orphans that we serve, and we spend time with them, and we are in relationship with them, and it's that depth that we believe will change a generation. It takes that kind of commitment, and it takes an army of people cheering that child on.
Right, and that is different, and that's when you talked about sponsorship, a lot of people in their mind have what that means. It's like, I'm going to ship off $50 and hopefully maybe I'll get a picture of that person. What makes Back-to-Back sponsorship unique is that Back-to-Back has an in-depth, intimate relationship with the orphans that they serve. And that naturally spills over then to their sponsor. They can really learn and know about the child that they're sponsoring.
Sure, and if anybody in the listening audience wants more information about orphan care, what Back-to-Back's doing, how to go on a trip, how to sponsor a child, you can reach out to me through our website with backtoback.org, and that's the number 2, back2back.org. And there, I'd be happy to unpack some more of this for anybody interested.
You know, we talk about so much stuff, and we just sort of assume that, oh, everybody knows what Beth does at Back-to-Back, and that's not necessarily the case. So I'm glad we had a chance to unpack that today. We'll do it some more in the future. Hey, be on the lookout for one out of 163 million. I'm really excited about that. Hey, thanks for a great Saturday. We're glad you joined us. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. Check us out on iTunes or on the web, and you can get this show or any other. And we'll be back same time next Saturday. And until then, have a great week.